The Mike Wagner Show is powered by Sonic Web Studios.
Hi, this is Mia Mohsen-Zia, also known as Mia No Time for Love. Check out my latest book, Missing, available in print and ebook formats on Amazon.
It's now time for The Mike Wagner Show, powered by Sonic Web Studios and sponsored by international award-winning author Mia Mohsen-Zia of Missing. The Mike Wagner Show can be heard on over 40 podcast platforms, as well as HamiltonRadio.net, Diamonds FM, and TheMikeWagnerShow.com. We can be heard in over 100 countries, featuring over 1,000 well-known and amazing guests throughout the globe, and named one of the top 100 global podcasts in the New York Weekly Times, Hollywood Entertainment News, Los Angeles Weekly Times, Apple, and Chartable. So sit back and relax and enjoy another great episode of the award-winning Mike Wagner Show.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike from the Mike Wagner Show, powered by Sonic Web Studios and brought to you by official sponsor of the Mike Wagner Show, international warring author Mia Mohsen-Zia Missing, available on Amazon and paperback and ebook. We're here with a terrific band out of Portland, Oregon, Asian American group founded by its leader, Simon Tan. He joins us here along with Joe Jang, and the band name originates from an effort of an appropriation, a source of legal battle back in 2019 in Mattel versus TAM in Supreme Court, and deeply involved with the Asian American community and racial justice work. They also got some music out there, which is Slanted, an American rock opera. The band who must not be named, and also Slanted Eyes, Slanted Hearts, and also Something Slated This Way Comes, and the Yellow Album. And a new album is out called The Band Plays On, featuring the title track, What Will People See, Advocate. We'll be playing Family at the end of the audio interview as well. And live, ladies and gentlemen, from the Plus Studios in Portland and Cincinnati. So find out which one they're coming by here, and talking about the album The Band Plays On and their amazing history. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got The Slants, Simon Tan, and Joe Jang. Guys, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks howdy, so much howdy. For having us.
Well, it's great to have you on board, guys. So Joe, just wanted to have you get started as well too. And you guys been in business for quite some time, founded in 06. And before I get to you, Simon, Joe, tell us how you first got started.
Music?
Way back machine.
Oh yeah, no, I was born in China a long, long time ago, and fell in love with music somewhere along the way, past the point where I was forced to piano as a kid. And just before I discovered like rock and roll, like I was really into 90s R&B and hip hop back in the day. I picked up a guitar, decided that I want to try to learn as many songs as possible, and then decided that I want to write my own songs. So it took a little while to get any kind of traction, like most people know. And actually, most people know it's pretty much impossible to really have traction. So I got really lucky, met Simon back in 2015. Join his band, and have been working on music with him ever since.
That's amazing. How'd you guys first meet?
I auditioned, this is a job application here. It's not just I had to audition through a pretty rigorous application. It was many, many, many pages of questions and answers, and then multiple, interviews with the band, an audition itself, and then... Yeah, Simon definitely knows how to run a business more so than anything else. He knows how to run a business where most of the bands I've been in, we have absolutely no sense of business at all. So it was really interesting to actually go into this band like it's a business and being like, okay, well, I need to know the songs before I show up. Oh, I need to actually know what answers to give when the band talks to me. It's not just hanging out and getting high or something and jamming afterwards. It's like literally like, oh, I have to answer these questions correctly. So that was the initial process. And then later on, I was like, oh, okay, there's still more human aspects to it and you can still have fun and play music. But yeah, that's how I joined the band.
That's interesting. And what was it one precise moment that simply influenced you to the rest of your career? What was that one moment that simply just lit a light bulb in you?
The rest of my career, I mean, when I first heard Radiohead, I was like, I want to do this. I mean, that was probably like a pre-joining a band environment. But then I would say with this Lance, let's just go with this Lance, within the time that I've been in this Lance, which was back in 2015, 16, I think it was just going to like a gig where we had absolutely no, like there was no audience there. There's like maybe four people.
And oh my goodness.
Being like, let's put on the best show we can. And we did. I mean, we rocked out as hard as we could for four people. It was, just, I think it was like Dungeons and Drafts. Is that where we were? And then afterwards, somebody like came up, was like, hey, we're going to book you at this convention. It's like, we're going to get you a gig there and you're going to get paid and you're going to have whatever. It's like, because you put on a good show at that time. And for me, like it changed a lot of what I thought of like live performances were. And I think that was pretty big. I mean, I still think about it now. It's just like, okay, we have to put on a good show. We have to try harder.
Mm-hmm. I think that sounds rather right. And who are some of your other singers, songwriters, and famous musicians growing up?
Growing up, I mean, Michael Jackson was huge. I love the, it's funny that we're in musical now, we're trying to work on musical stuff, but my one of my favorite pieces of music is Little Shop of Horrors, the 90s version, the actual, like, you know, the movie and the musical that, you know, came from the classic Roger Corman film. I think that I didn't understand Motown, I didn't understand soul music, and it all came from there. Like, I loved Michael Jackson at the time, but like that album was like, oh, there's so much great music that came before. And then later on, it was Radiohead by far, like those biggest influence. Radiohead, Tegan and Sarah, and then I guess Dave Matthews Band. I'm going to say Dave Matthews Band.
I think that's a really good one as well, too. And okay, Simon, you're the leader of the group. And tell us how you first got started.
I mean, for as long as I can remember, I was
way back always machine.
I mean, just since I was a kid, I was obsessed with music. I would fall asleep with next to my dad's stereo, listening to records, and try and listen to the radio as much as possible, making mixtapes and that sort of thing. And then at 10 years old, I picked up the bass guitar for the first time and have been playing it ever since. So it is just a really big part of my childhood growing up is just playing music. It was kind of like my escape because, you know, I didn't have a lot of friends. I wasn't going out a ton. It was like I hung out and played bass and listened to the radio.
Mm-hmm. And that sounds like a good thing to do. And what was that one precise moment that simply influenced you into what you're doing for the rest of your career?
I think for me, it was probably the first time that I learned Sweet Child of Mine on bass guitar, like hearing the bass line.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. And hearing the kind of like blues scales that my bass teacher was teaching me and seeing like, oh, all this stuff I'm learning about these jazz and blues scales that I thought was super boring were actually really applicable because it's directly tied into rock and roll. And I could hear it in some of my favorite bands. And I started realizing that sometimes you got to do the really boring technical stuff if you want to do the really fun stuff, because it comes from that place. And so I think that was like a really big aha moment for me, especially as I started joining bands and playing and that sort of thing. I was like, okay, well, a lot of my music is still rooted in these like basic music theory kind of ideas, like the circle fifths and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. And what are some other favorite singers, songwriters, musicians growing up, especially bass players?
I mean, Duff McKagan for sure was like a huge influence of mine. But I think as I got into high school, I just really, really fell in love with the Ramones and all the bands that they inspired. So like the mid to early 1990s Lookout Records lineup, which of course was like Green Day, the Mr. T Experience, the Queers, Screeching Weasel, bands like that. I just really just, I don't know, something about that raw teenage angst, pre-emo pop punk movement of that, that a lot of kids don't know of today. It was just like, they were all like super catchy, easy to sing along to. I mean, 3 to 5 chords at the very most. So it seemed like really simple, but at the same time, it was just kind of a continuation off of those early days of rock and roll. You know, the 50s and 60s, and to see that, but with a little bit more distorted guitar and fun, it was like the soundtrack for my high school years.
That is really interesting. And how did the Slants come about with Simon Ken and Joe Jang. We'll find out in just 1 minute, along with the band plays on. You listen to The Mike Wagner Show at themikewagnershow.com, powered by Sonic Web Studios. Visit online at sonicwebstudios.com for all your needs. Look at a professional website without breaking your budget. Sonic Web Studios is the answer. Sonic Web Studios offers fast, affordable custom web designs that blow the competition away. Call today, 1-800-303-3960. That's 1-800-303-3960. Or email to support at sonicwebstudios.com. Mention the Mike Wagner Show, get 20% off your first project. Sonic Web Studios, take your image to the next level. Also, time to give an official shout-out to our official sponsor, the Mike Wagner Show, international warring author Mia Molson-Zia. If you love fast-paced mysteries, you'll love Missing by Mia Molson-Zia, available on Amazon and paperback and ebook. Missing is fast-paced and intriguing with an unforgettable twist. It takes place in four countries, two strangers, one target, where truth is illusion and those who love Peter first go missing. It's available on Amazon and paperback and ebook. Missing by Mia Molson-Zia has garnered great reviews. In Evil and Endorsed by Howard Celebrities, including Joanna Cassidy, Forge Riley, and many others. So grab your copy today for Virgo's Missing by Mia Molson-Zia, available on Amazon. Also, check out The Mike Wagner Show at themikewagnershow.com on 40 podcast platforms. Heard in 100 countries, including Facebook, SoundCloud, Spreaker, Spotify, iHeartRadio, also Odyssey, Apple Music, Podbean, Pandora, TuneIn, BitChute, Rumble, YouTube. Make sure you subscribe. Also, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, TikTok, Threads, and more. Take us with you on any mobile device. And for great gift ideas, go to Amazon.com. Check out the Mike Wagner Show podcast. T-shirts, pop sockets, throw pillows, tote bags, hoodies. Makes great gifts 24/7 year-round. Go to Amazon.com. Check out the Mike Wagner Show podcast. And for more great gift ideas, go to Amazon.com/MiaMolson-Zia for great books like Missing, Once, and Wrinkles. Also T-shirts, pop sockets, hoodies, phone cases, and more. Amazon.com/MiaMolson-Zia. Check it out today. And support the Mike Wagner Show on Anchor FM, PayPal, and TheMikeWagnerShow.com. We're here with Simon Tan and Joe Jiang of The Slants here on The Mike Wagner Show, based out of Portland, Oregon. And before we talk about The Band Plays On, and there was an interesting case that got a lot of attention in the Supreme Court. But first, let's talk about how you guys all got started, formed, and everything else. So the history of the band, let's just go way, way back.
Well, the history of the band is, it really kind of started with a whole bunch of Craigslist ads and local alt weekly ads, just trying to find people. For me, I was trying to find other Asian American musicians, people who kind of had that punk ethos, but people who, like me, grew up in the 1980s. So we kind of had this love for new wave synth pop music. And so trying to just combine those two, that kind of punk attitude with that 80s sound. And once we got a lineup together, that was early 2007, within a few months, we had our first album out and we were on the road. And so we were just kind of touring ever since then, playing everything from dive bars and punk shows to anime conventions and anything else that we could find that would provide a stage for us.
That is rather interesting. And of course, Joe, if you want to jump in, feel free to do so as well.
Oh, that was a Simon story there. I wasn't in the band for the first nine years. Yeah. Oh,
we're old.
I forgot to ask you about that lengthy questionnaire you had to fill out, the application before the interview. What are some of the questions that you had to answer? It's like it can be unusual or whatever.
Oh, no, it's actually timing wise was really interesting, too, because I was a vegan for many years prior to joining this band. My band in Eugene that I still play with, most of those guys were vegan at the time, if not still vegan. And so I was a vegan for like years, and then right before joining the Slants, I had just started to eat meat again. And so like one of the questions for the Slants to go on tour, what are your dietary restrictions? And it felt like the question was like, if you don't eat the type of food that we eat, you may not join this band. So I was like, I'm willing to eat anything, because I grew up eating meat and I was all willing to do it. But it was one of those things where it's like, nobody asked that question, right? Like, I don't really think about asking that question. I guess maybe you do, but anyway, so that became a thing later on where I kept saying like, I'm a vegan, or I have like vegan, dietary things, but I'm like the one eating the tomahawk steak or something.
Oh my God, it makes me hungry already.
Right. So the worst vegan ever, but like that was one of those questions. I think in general is more like, can you tour? Are you willing to like, say, put personal life on hold for certain things? Like, are you willing to be on the road for half the year or however long it is? And we have been on the road for half a year when I joined the band, at least this latter days of the band. So like the idea of being on the road for that long, not being with the significant other, we're having to deal with, you know, other responsibilities, work, whatever else. Like, those were all questions. I'm sure there were like technical questions about playing music, but I think
there wasn't a lot of technical questions, but okay. I think for us, we wanted to make sure that people who came on board had similar goals. Like, what is it that you want to do? Because I think so many people just get together and join a band thinking like, hey, let's play some music, but they don't really have the same direction in terms of like how often they want to be on the road for, how often they want to be, you know, cutting a record or that sort of thing. And for me, having been through many different band members where the expectations didn't really line up with what we were doing, it oftentimes became a point of frustration. So we just tried to address that as soon as possible, as early as possible, so that we're not wasting anybody else's time and they're not wasting ours. Of course, it doesn't always end up perfectly. Like, I mean, sometimes people evolve and change and the band's needs change too. But I think that was the original intention of that, and just kind of weeding out people who weren't going to be really, really serious about it or treat the band seriously versus those who are going to try a little bit more and put some thought into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he also talked about, you know, the whole thing with food or something, maybe you think of Pink Floyd. If you don't eat your meat, you can't have any pudding.
I mean, the funny thing is, a little while after Joe joined, we did have a band member who joined who had pretty significant dietary restrictions.
Oh, wow.
We just made it work. You know, we're going to try and be accommodating. But I think that question was really to be like, how flexible are you, especially if like the schedule is really tight and we don't always have the ability to be able to stop for everyone or to make sure that that people could be kind of happy in any situation. Like there are a number of shows where we would go and we would be hosted by other people. And if they're making us dinner, we want to be able to like,
that's a good point.
Culturally, it's really important for us to be able to like accept what is given to us. So just that sort of thing.
Yeah, and also like if you actually have a relationship with people like over the course of many, many years, if, you know, like if the band really sticks together for it, it's like going on a dating app and selecting like dietary restrictions on a dating app or meeting somebody that you know you're going to be spending your life with. You're like, you probably want to know, like, are we going to be able to share dinner together? And like, even like when Simon brought up like having band members that had dietary restrictions, it did cause issues. Like, you know, we wanted to be supportive, but it's like if you feel bad sometimes where you're like stuck in the middle of nowhere and the only food you can eat might kill that person. And you're
right,
like,
yeah,
well, we just want to stop that. Off at like this crappy restaurant and eat the garbage food, but like we're all hungry and it's going to be great. And that guy's like, oh no, I'm going to be on the toilet the whole night afterwards. It sucks. I feel bad for that person. Like, but that's kind of where you just have to know like what your limits are and if you're willing to still do it. And most bands, I would say, like, as much as you dream of touring, a lot of bands find out they're not meant for touring.
Right, like, yeah. Like, and of course, all depends on a lot of things. I mean, you look at the number of breakups, fights, and everything that you often read in the news. And then later on, you know, so many legendary bands, you know, fight all the time. It's like, you're right, how are they going to handle the touring and everything? So that's a lot to consider as well, too. And of course, you know, you also guys made news being in a Supreme Court battle over an effort to reappropriation of the name The Slants. It was in 2019, Mattel versus Tam in Supreme Court, and Judge Ginsburg, you know, presided the case. That was a big story for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, it spent nearly 8 years in this legal battle trying to fight for the right to register the trademark for our name, but at the same time, still try and continue as a band. Like, if you look over the course of that time period, we had 5 different album releases, you know, almost 20 tours. Coast to coast, we at that time we cycled through many, many band members as well. So, not the most traditional music career that you know, a band will have, but for us, whether we liked it or not, it became kind of a pretty defining moment for the band itself. And I think for us, showed us that like maybe it was the idea of the band that actually mattered more than the band itself, like what people saw as a symbolic action for fighting for our own dignity. You know, for better or for worse, I think more people kind of gravitate towards that story than the music itself. But since there's been a little bit of distance from that decision, and since we've been pretty proactive in, you know, doing other things creatively, I think more people are kind of coming back around and listening to the music and finding a different kind of relationship with the band.
Mm-hmm. And of course, you talked about, you know, being involved with the Asian American community, also racial justice work. What was that one starting point that simply said that we're going to start making a big difference in the community, racial justice and everything else, and having all these causes? What was that one starting point moment that simply said we're going to fight for what we believe in?
I don't know if it was any like one particular moment. It's not like we set out starting this band thinking, oh, we're going to change the world and fight for people who are marginalized and that sort of thing. It was like, as we were playing, kids would just write us and say, like, thank you for existing. Thank you for showing me that, you know, there can be Asian American rock people out there. And then as we continued on, we would get asked to join certain campaigns, either,
oh, wow,
you know, to fight bullying in schools, because Asians are some of the most bullied kids in American schools, mm-hmm, or to do like a community fundraiser or the other things. And as we could just continued plodding along, it just became more and more this realization that whether we liked it or not, we were going to be judged by our actions. We were going to be judged as, you know, representatives of our community. So we needed to really step it up and make sure that we knew what we were doing, that we knew what we were talking about. And it was really important for us to be aligned with other people in the community to make sure that, you know, we could represent their issues pretty well. And, you know, I know we're not always the perfect guys to do it, but it was one of those things that we just continued to learn along the way. And I think, you know, these days, since we started our nonprofit and foundation, we find ourselves in that work even more than when we were actively touring.
Hmm. That is rather interesting. I like that. And you also had some releases too, like Slanted and American Rock Opera, the band who must not be named, Slanted Eye, Slanted Heart, and also Something Slayeth This Way Comes, and the Yellow Album. Tell us more about those.
Well, the opera was something that Joe and I worked on. We were commissioned by the Opera Theater St. Louis to develop an operetta for the stage. And then the other albums that you named were just full-length releases and EPs that we had dropped over the years, amongst several others. Each one kind of, again, evolving with our sound. Sometimes we swayed more in that synth pop kind of genre, and other times we were a little bit more rock and roll. Oftentimes it depended who was in the band at the time, like what the members looked like, and also just kind of what we were feeling. I mean, all artists, just like people and anyone using creative expression, will change over time depending on like what you're experiencing, what you're feeling. And sometimes you feel a little more angsty, and sometimes you feel like a little deeper. I would say our newest album, The Band Plays On, was developed, you know, we took our time on it. Joe and I had been writing some of these songs for 4 or 5 years, and we just wanted to fully invest into the story and really think deeply about the meaning of each of the songs. And I think that was the first album we produced that wasn't in a rushed fashion. It wasn't like, oh, we got to get this done and recorded and mixed and mastered in time so we can hit this tour, because we'd oftentimes book the tours in advance of the album being fully done and then needed to just kind of ram it through. This album, we were like, let's make sure we're 100% set on the songs. Let's make sure that the production is really what we want, that it represents the songs in the way that we want. And I gotta say, it was super rewarding and super refreshing. I mean, I'm immensely proud of the music on it. And I think for me, it really represents a big core of who we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, with the foundation that we have too, which is about bringing together, you know, people in our community, artists, helping other artists, and also like learning from other artists, the album is literally a representation of that, where we brought on our co-board member, Bao, as our producer on the album. And then we brought on all these artists that we've come to know from the foundation, and they are the voices of this album. And so, like, again, we're trying to still combine both what we want to do, which is just to write songs and make music, and then also what the foundation's trying to do, which is to bring people together and to support each other. And so, like, it worked out pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so it's sometimes a little bit humbling, and I think eye-opening to think that you can write something that is extremely personal to you, and sometimes it's not your own voice that's the best vehicle for expressing that. I think that was a really big lesson that Joe and I learned when we composed and wrote an opera. We're like, man, these singers, we can't even touch them. And we imagined these songs to be a very certain way. We've, you know, got the demos down and everything. But when we first heard this thing being played by classical singers and a pianist who's just one of the most talented musicians I ever met, it was like, wow, like this thing that we created could be so much better when other people are involved. Just like the intentions you might have in terms of like an idea for advancing justice or some form of activism, oftentimes it gets better when you involve other people, and it changes in ways that you can't even imagine when you first begin.
Mm-hmm. And certainly does as well too. We'll talk with the Slants, Joe Jang, and also Simon Tan with the Band Plays On, and more of the music in just 1 minute. You listen to the Mike Widener Show at themikewidenershow.com, powered by Sonic Web Studios, and brought to you by official sponsor of the Mike Widener Show, Interracial Warring author Mia Melsonzia. We'll be back with Simon Tan and Joe Jang of the Slants after this timeout.
The Mike Widener Show is powered by Sonic Web Studios. If you're looking to start or upgrade your online presence, visit www.sonicwebstudios.com for all of your online needs. Call 1-800-303-3960 or visit us online at www.sonicwebstudios.com to get started today. Mention the Mike Widener Show and get 20% off your project. Sonic Web Studios. Take your image to the next level.
Hey everybody, my name is Forbes Riley, and I'm an American actress and a TV host. And I was delighted when I got my copy of Missing, which is Extraordinary Relation of Ordinary People Based on a Real Life Relationship. It's just, it's well written. It's amazing. You know, it talks about a man who has lost his wife and his daughter, and it's very well done. I'm going to highly recommend that you go get your copy of Missing. It is a powerful, exciting read. Mr. Mian Moshe Zia, he is the author of Missing. And I want to give a big shout out and a kiss all the way halfway around the world to my dear friend. Check him out at Mia's website. It's called www.miamoshenzea.com. Missing, available on Amazon. Again, I'm Forbes Riley, and I will see you again soon. Bye-bye.
Hey, hey, this is Ray Powers, and boy, are you in luck. Right place, right time. Tuned in to the Mike Widener Show. You heard me.
We're back with Simon Tan and Joe Jang of the Slants here on the Mike Widener Show, and let's continue with The Band Plays On. You talked about the title track. There's also some a few others we'll cover, like What Will People Say, Advocate, Drifting Pages, This Is Who We Are, and tell us more about those songs and what inspired you to write, and also we'll be airing Family as well, too, and a bit more about that.
I think our idea for this album really kind of came about as in a long way. Like Joe and I were working on a Broadway musical and writing songs to kind of tell our band's story. And then I can't remember exactly how it came along. I think Joe suggested like the idea of a concept album that really dove deeply into our story, and who better to tell our story than ourselves and through our own songwriting process. So each of the songs actually represent a different moment in our lives, that, you know, whether our personal lives or the lives as a band, because it, you know, oftentimes it just kind of intermingles. And so each deeply personal moment was just expressed through a song, and sometimes people interpret it in a very different way because they see themselves in it. For example, I think one music reviewer said that the song Advocate is about being tired of being touring, touring constantly on the road. And that's not the case at all. You know, although the setting is on a tour, it actually came about from a very real story where we are on the road. It was 2017, and sometimes doing multiple shows a day and in between me doing speaking engagements. And I lost my voice in the middle of that tour.
Ooh, so, I hate that. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so there's a line that basically says, like, I lost my voice, I'm not making melodies, I'm just making noise. But my biggest frustration all along was that, you know, I was in the midst of this major legal battle, I was in the midst of just trying to tell our band's story, and I oftentimes felt like I didn't have the agency to tell our story, because I wasn't the lead singer, I wasn't the lawyer, and it was like, where did I have that agency? Where could I actually seize that? I always relied on an advocate, on somebody else to sing those songs, to say the thing that I wanted to be said in a courtroom. And so that was like my kind of cry, my need of like need an advocate.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. And Joey can also chime in as well too about some of the music as well.
Yeah, in general, I think we wanted it to feel also, again, not, even though it's our stories and our sort of connection to the band's journey, we also didn't want it to feel like it's just another band's album that it's, you know, it's very much self-serving. Like we're talking about ourselves and we're singing about ourselves. And so when this album came about, it was like actors, right? We're talking about a musical. We wanted to have roles for other people. At the same time, it benefits for every song to have a different voice, to for that voice to have meaning on its own, right? Like to, instead of like a dude singing every song, all the perspectives from this dude from the band, you know, experiences, it's like, oh no, now we're bringing somebody else who's an incredible singer, like one of the songs actually I wrote, which was about, this was after one of the school shootings, which, like, you know, you're so numb to it after a certain point, you just, for me, sometimes I'm just like, oh, that sucks, I'm gonna write a song about it. And it was literally like the day after a school shooting, I started writing the song called Will You Let Me Know. And it existed as its own little thing, and it's weirdly like poppy sound for a really sad, you know, response to an event. And then we brought in Jane Louie, who's an incredible singer, incredible performer. She has her own project, she's in musicals, and she was actually recently featured in Everything Everywhere All at Once. One of the best singers ever. And she took the song, performed it, as Bao said, like an actor who can also really sing. Like she really gave it character to it. And I think it changed my version of it. The demo that I recorded is like, you know, like it didn't have the same weight as when she started to sing it and, mm-hmm. and really gave it that voice. So I think along with a lot of the songs, it's just giving it the weight, giving it some kind of a perspective. Mm. And then now I'm like, okay, so that's the definitive version of that song. There's no other version. I can't imagine actually if we were just regular rock band still and somebody else who was one of our old lead singers singing it, it doesn't feel the same. We performed at the LA show, like, you know, that was the first time I got to hear her singing in person too. And it was like just mind blowing to hear her voice live with us playing with her. Mm-hmm. And again, that's, I can't wait to actually, if we have more opportunities like that, to hear some of these other guest artists sing with us. Like, I really want to live and breathe these songs with these other voices and these other people that are representing these songs. Mm.
That's really interesting because you talked about the school shooting that prompted you to write the song, Will You Let Me Know? Do you remember which school shooting in particular?
I mean, this is the messed up part, right? There's so many. There's been so many of it. This was this would have been 2019, I think, is when I, because that's around the time where I definitely that was written in 2019, and then throughout 2019, 2020, we were like, Jane, would you be willing to maybe work on the song at some point? This is before the album, I felt like. So like it was 2019, we're right before it, and again, there's been so many, and we are honestly numb to it. Literally now, if I see an article of it, another school shooting, I would probably just scroll past it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just like on Facebook, you see something you don't like, you just scroll past and move on like a mature person does. And
that's what social media is. We right. Literally are like, this is just, everything is normalized to the point where like even the most horrific things that we could think of is just like, okay, well, it's like watching
scroll
a horror
past,
movie.
Like, next, yeah. Frowny face, emoji, whatever it is. And
I watched X, the horror film, earlier today, and there were some pretty, you know, like, I love horror films, and I'm not one to be like, oh my God, somebody got killed in the horror film. But it was more like, I laughed when somebody got blown away. Like, I was like, ha ha, very funny. But that shouldn't be real life. You shouldn't just like, but for me, my response was like, no, I did feel sad at that particular one. It was one of the more like horrifying ones where there was multiple, and I'm pretty sure it was a high school one because the song is set in a high school, and it's actually set in my head in my high school about someone who might actually be having these like suicidal and, you know, gunman like tendency like thoughts, right? Mm-hmm. And having that moment of going to school and be like, what do I, you know, if I knew that person, if I actually knew this person, had an inkling of what they might go and do, like what would I say to that person? Like how would I try to like communicate with them, knowing like you may never have an opportunity because half of these times now you don't even know. And anyway, so that's Yeah, that's where it came from.
Right, pretty much, yeah. And of course, besides all the music you mentioned, if there's other music you want to talk about, other songs, feel free to do so.
I mean, I think the overall, what was really special about this project is that, like Joe was saying, like when you hear other people's voices start singing those songs, it's like almost like those songs are no longer ours. They're embodied in a different kind of way. And it just reminds me of what I hear all the time through our foundation. Like this younger generation will write saying like that they're really inspired by, you know, something our band did or that sort of thing. And maybe they see parts of our story in ways that I don't see, or that we, you know, when we're living through it, it's very hard for us to like fully understand and experience. But that really shows the power of community and art, that when people can see themselves in your work, and they can see themselves in your music in some kind of way, and it allows them to learn something about themselves, it's a really powerful thing. And that's one of the things that I just really love about running this nonprofit, that we get to just meet and invest in so many artists, and you know, to be able to collaborate with them on our album. It the reason why we call it The Band Plays On in many ways is like our band, even though we actually, you know, kind of disbanded and stopped touring in 2019 for any kind of reasonable effect, our band continues to play on through our foundation, through this other generation, through other artists who pick up a new guitar or a synthesizer or some drumsticks, and they begin taking up the beat and writing their own songs.
That is rather interesting. I like that. In the meantime, where can we find all your music at, including your latest?
You can go to theslants.com for just about anything related to us. And, you know, of course, all the usual spots from Spotify to Tidal to Apple. But for folks who want to have one of the, like the limited edition like vinyl records, theslants.com is the only place to get it right now.
All right, we'll certainly check that out. Once again, we're with Simon Tam and Joe Jang of The Slants here on The Mike Wagner Show. And just a few more things here. What else can we expect you guys in 2024 and beyond?
Well, I think Joe and I are going to continue, you know, touring and telling stories and doing presentations. So while the band isn't touring as a rock band anymore, Joe and I will oftentimes share our music through acoustic storytelling sessions and we kind of just share the message of the band while bringing some additional light to the work of our nonprofit. We're also composing a musical theater show right now, which is going to play at the No Theater Cincinnati later this fall. And, you know, if we do a full band show, it's going to be pretty rare. It might be one or two of them at 2024, but the reality is it's so hard to do that now because we live in multiple different states. Right. And everyone has their own lives now, and we've all kind of moved on. But while we deeply are connected with them, and we love them, and you know, we're great friends, everyone's just kind of doing their own thing now. And so the work of the band is really living through the nonprofit, and you know, through the voices that we're helping to foster, that just kind of really work at that intersection of culture and civic engagement.
Okay, so, well, that's. Go ahead.
I want to shout out the music video for the song Family that we shot and made last 2 months ago. It actually features a semi-mini reunion tour that we did with the former lineup that I most wanted to see live of The Slants. And it was really incredible to have all these former band members get together, and not only get together, but actually like break bread and hang out for more than just a quick show, right? Like actually go on a tour, like play Seattle and then play Portland and then play LA. Like several of the members made it down to LA to play a show. And I think one of my favorite things about it was, again, I wasn't in The Slants at that point. All those members outside of the drummer Tyler, I didn't get to actually really play with or meet. And I love playing music with other people. And to see this old, the version of the band that you see in like the Supreme Court, like presentation or whatever, talking about this band that's racist to Asians or whatever. It's like, no, these are the guys. These are the real guys that were that band that actually traveled the country and did this thing and were punk rock. Like they were rock and roll I am not. Like, I can't go and I don't even know what the word is. Mosh, that's a word. Like, go
mosh,
and, like,
mosh, yeah.
And punch people in the crowd and fight people. That
we
was
did mosh. We did not fight.
Well, Aaron threw a mic and broke my guitar head. So, like, that was, it happens. So, like, to me, it's like, this just happened. And to witness that, and so even though the band plays on is about, like, sort of the idea of carrying on the legacy and having sort of these new voices and new artists come about, it's also really cool to see the actual old version of the band play on as well. And so if people wanted to see that or relive some of those memories, there's a music video that's on YouTube.
All right, well, certainly check that out in the meantime. And who do you consider biggest influences in your careers?
Simon Tam is my biggest influence.
No,
he might be my boss, but he's also my mentor, and he's the only person that's actually paid me to play music. Literally the only person, and outside of my friends, I'm probably the only person that I know that actually makes music, makes money playing music, and it's because of Simon. So, like, I would say Simon Tam.
Thank you, but I don't know if that's a real answer. I mean, I think there's just so many great folks out there for so many different reasons, and I think we've been really lucky to meet so many people along the journey who've taught us something that we could pick up along the way, from fellow band members, as Joe mentioned, to working with people like Val on this album, who I learned so much from. But also, you know, the people I think that inspired me to pick up the bass or to write songs to begin with, they do it in so many different ways. And sometimes it's a very surprising, a surprise influence that people think is totally left field. Like, I mean, one of our songs is inspired by Dolly Parton, because I think she's just really embodied this ability to tell stories through her songs, just like Bruce Springsteen or some of the other greats. But, you know, I think for us, we don't really try and judge by the genre of music. For me, I'm like, what's their story? What's the soul? What can we pull from this that I could see myself in? There's just way too many artists to name when it comes to those lessons.
Mm-hmm. That's
Dave Matthews.
Exactly. Yeah, it's understandable. And what's the best advice you guys can give to anybody at this point?
I think if there's any lesson that I've learned with our band in particular is to persist. That so many people worry about the talent and the skills required to play music. And I would say don't let that stop you. I mean, I'm a very mediocre bass player, and somehow it worked out for me. And I think a lot of it is due to the fact that I just continue to persist. We have been able to win our case or start this nonprofit had we not just been so determined to see that outcome through and to persist through it, that, you know, that's what allowed us to really be successful, I think, in a ways that I probably couldn't have imagined as a kid growing up who just dreamed of doing this.
Mm-hmm, and certainly do. And Joe, what's the best advice you can give to anybody at this point?
I mean, that's actually the lesson that I learned from Simon. That's, if I ever to make a documentary about Simon Tam, that is the lesson. That is someone who, against all odds, did the thing that he really wanted to do, right? And whether that is to play music, if you're not the most talented musician, to win a legal case when you're not a lawyer, like, that literally is what I learned from him. And I mean, there's still part of me that says, like, yeah, you should probably try a little harder. And if you might not be the best at something, pick your lane. But if you really want to do what you want to do, if you really believe that you have something to offer to that world, whatever the art is, whatever the field you want to do, the persistence, like, that is literally what I've seen win.
Okay.
Simon Tam.
That is certainly amazing as well. Once again, we're with Simon Tam and Joe Jang of the Slant here on the Mike Wagner Show with the band plays on. Guys, a very big thank you for your time. You've been absolutely fantastic. Learned a lot from both of you. Looking forward to having you soon. Keep us up to date. Keep in touch. Live happy back. Once again, what's your website? How do people contact you? Where can people purchase or check out your works?
And theslants.com. And of course, please check out our nonprofit, theslants.org. We do fund, mentor, and provide resources for artists, especially Asian American artists. So That to me is our life's work now. It's something I'm very passionate about. And so for anyone who's interested in finding their voice through art, whether it's music, theater, film, or anything else, check out thislance.org.
All right, well, certainly check that out, guys. Guys, a very big thank you for your time. You've been absolutely fantastic. Looking forward to having you again soon. Keep us up to date. Keep in touch. Love to have you back. Wish you all the best. And, guys, you definitely have a great future ahead of you.
Mike Wagner Show is powered by Sonic Web Studios. If you're looking to start or upgrade your online presence, visit www.sonicwebstudios.com for all of your online needs. Call 1-800-303-3960 or visit us online at www.sonicwebstudios.com to get started today. Mention the Mike Wagner Show and get 20% off your project. Sonic Web Studios. Take your image to the next level.
Hey everybody, my name is Forbes Riley, and I'm an American actress and a TV host, and I was delighted when I got my copy of Missing, which is Extraordinary Relation of Ordinary People Based on a Real Life Relationship. It's well written. It's amazing. You know, it talks about a man who has lost his wife and his daughter, and it's very well done. I'm gonna highly recommend that you go get your copy of Missing. It is a powerful, exciting read. Mr. Mian Moshe Zia. He is the author of Missing. And I want to give a big shout out and a kiss all the way halfway around the world to my dear friend. Check him out at Mia's website. It's called www.miamoshenzea.com. Missing, available on Amazon. Again, I'm Forbes Riley, and I will see you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to The Mike Wagner Show. Brought to you by international award-winning author Mia Mosenzia of Missing and powered by Sonic Web Studios. Be sure to join us again on over 40 podcast platforms. And of course, on themikewagnershow.com, hamiltonradio.net, and Diamonds FM. Don't forget to support our program with a generous donation at themikewagnershow.com. Thanks for listening.